We will call a meeting to order. This is State Government Finance for Tuesday, March 6, 2012. We do have a quorum, and you have before you the minutes from our March 1st meeting. Would someone move those minutes?
No move.
Representative Gunther moved. Any additions or corrections? Seeing or hearing none, all in favor of the March 1st minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. We, Representative Beard has another committee going on right now, and he asked if we could move up consideration for 2169, so we will do that. I understand he's right in the hall, so... Mr. Marble is going to bring him in so we can take care of considering 2169. Morning, Representative Beard.
Good morning, Representative Lanning and members. We were thinking we have our number three, but this is good.
Well, I understand you've got some other business that you have to take care of, so...
Yes.
I will move House File 2169 to be recommended to pass and re-referred to Ways and Means. And I understand you have an amendment, Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, I do. You still have an amendment in your packets, members. And Arlen, if you bring me one, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Do you want to explain the amendment?
Ms. Chair, I'd like to ask if Ms. Burnett could join me at the stand here this morning, please. The good discussion we had, Mr. Chairman, members, in the last committee meeting when I was here, what is today, Tuesday? Must have been Thursday last week, resulted in some notes and some discussion with... especially with the lawyers in the group, talking about clear and convincing, I think, was in one of the amendments that I had offered, one of the iterations of the bill that came forward from the last committee. And in discussing that offline with some of the folks and some of the concerns they had, it seemed that we could accomplish the mission of the bill, which is pretty much twofold, to ask the agencies to update the rules that in the last 10 years since they did this last time, and to notify also the ranking members, minority members, and the chairs of the policy committees, as well as the LCC. This bill is designed to shed light. It's not designed to be a minefield to trigger lawsuits and so on and so forth. So in order to make that very clear, we offer this amendment that does that and clarifies some other language as well. If you'd like, I could have either Mr. Shepherd or Ms. Burnett explain exactly what the amendment does, and then I can speak to why we did that.
Welcome, Ms. Burnett. Do you want to comment about the amendment?
Perhaps Mr. Shepherd, who helped us draft it, probably could clearly delineate the changes we made.
Okay.
And then I'll talk about why we made them.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair and members, the first line of the A4 amendment refers to page 2, lines 21 to 24 of the bill. And it, as Representative Beard just indicated, this deletes the language relating to clear and convincing evidence that was discussed last time. So that would be taken out of the bill. On page 3, the amendment deletes lines 12 to 14 of page 3. This is the information that agencies would submit to the Sunset Advisory Commission, and this is deleting a couple of different kinds of things so that those would not have to be submitted. And then on page 3, line 21, it provides that if the commission wants more information, all or portion of the rulemaking records, they can ask for it, and then the agency would submit it. On page 6, line 10, this relates to the section that is dealing with agencies' policies, guidelines, and other statements that are not adopted as rules, and it just deletes the words implement or so that this section would apply only when an agency is seeking to enforce one of these policies, guidelines, or non-binding interpretive statements. On page 6, lines 16 to 19 is deleted. This has to do with notice that would be given to the chairs and ranking minority members of legislative committees, and you see on lines 10 to 14 of the amendment the new information that would be required to be submitted, the rulemaking docket, which looks forward, and the rulemaking record for the prior year, which would look backwards at rules that the agency adopted. Finally, on the amendment, it affects page 9, lines 10 to 17. This is the report that the PCA, DNR, Bowser, EQB, and the Department of Agriculture have to submit in January of 2013, and it deletes the contents of that are in the current bill, and then in the amendment, it specifies what would be included in the report. The statutory authority, assessment of differences between the agency's rules and existing federal rules, and the need for the differences, a brief rationale for the rules that agencies remain should be in effect, and changes that would improve the agency's ability to meet regulatory objectives while reducing unnecessary burdens. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, in order to get the bill in the shape that the author prefers, I will move the A4 amendment. Discussion on the A4 amendment. All in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The A4 amendment is adopted.
Good morning.
Representative Beard.
Thank you for putting the bill in the condition which we wish to present it. Mr. Chairman, the bill is a rulemaking bill, and I think by adopting the amendment, we keep it very clearly that way, and so it won't have to make a stop in every committee who has jurisdiction over any agency who might ever make a rule. This is about state government, and so we did the state government, the Government Operations Committee and this committee, and then I think Ways and Means is probably the right place to go because of the amendment you just adopted. Thank you for doing that. We're ready to stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to start out by thanking you, Representative Beard, and Ms. Frenette and Mr. Grooms for really an extraordinary job of serious legislating here. And I think you've done a great job of being open to listening to ways to perfect and make your bill a lot better. So I think this is the way it ought to be done, and
you've
done a great job. I do have a couple questions. I just see, for the first time, I haven't even looked at it yet. I see that we have a preliminary fiscal note. I haven't read it. I'm just looking at the cover page here. I assume this is related to the last section of the bill. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it. Do you or Ms. Burnett or Mr. Grooms care to comment on it? Is it...
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, no. The updated one, this is the first time we're looking at this, and I'm just to take a note here that this is those LCC costs. Mr. Chairman, the...
Representative Beard, Ms. Roberts has some information.
Oh, thank you. Let's let her comment first.
Mr. Chair, members, this is the same version of the fiscal note that we had last week. I had requested another version, but then knowing that there was going to be yet another amendment today, we waited for that to ask for a revised version. And again, this you're only seeing the sections that relate to the agencies that are directly under the jurisdiction of this committee, so that's the legislature, Department of Administration, and the Secretary of State. The other environmental agencies at this point hadn't completed their portion of the bill or of the fiscal note. And the only agency that is showing some costs is the legislature itself for potential member costs related to if policy committees were required to meet during the interim to review rules.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as I noted in the last committee when we did have a brief discussion about the fiscal note as it stood at that time, the compliance that with the 2003 reports that were required by the 2001 legislature, the three that I referenced came in well under $10,000 each with existing staff. The amendment that we adopted, I believe, last Thursday directs the departments in then complying with this new bill, should it become law, to just absorb them internally. I know that the amendment you adopted today did not drive costs up. If anything, it drove them down. So I'm anticipating the fiscal note in Ways and Means will probably be substantially smaller than this one.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on the subject again of costs, looking at the last section of the bill, Section 11, I don't think it's any surprise that some of the agencies involved are perhaps a little nervous about the accelerated process here. This has to do with the Sunset Commission, I believe, and the fact that even though they wouldn't be up for review normally until, I think, 2018, this would accelerate it so that they have to provide the list provided here by January 15th, 2013. Can you just give any comfort, or maybe not, but can you comment on what you perceive to be the ability of these specific agencies to come up with that information by January 15th? Have they had to do this before, for example? What are we really talking about, if you know?
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the question. In my opening comments, which seemed like ages ago, I talked about trying to draft a bill that dovetailed with things the governor has already asked the agencies to do in one of his executive orders, for instance. Ms. Frenette is much more familiar with those things and why I don't think this will be a huge reach for the agencies while they're complying with other things. We're basically asking that they forward them to us and to the LCC as well. But, Ms. Chair, if I could have Ms. Frenette speak directly to it, that would be probably helpful.
Ms. Frenette?
Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Simon, three things have happened in the past year that helps this dovetail together. First of all, I'm going to step back to 2000. We have literally mirrored some language that was passed in 2000 that asked the agencies to update everybody on their rules to file a report. We actually have copies of the Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, Pollution Control Agency, and the Department of Labor and Industry. And as Representative Beard had told you each earlier, all of the agencies' reports came in under $10,000. What we're asking them to do now is update their rules, or the report of the rules that they had done 10 years ago. And the update of their rules that they had done 10 years ago, you know, talks about federal redundancies or things that might be out there that are similar to the feds or what they have to do in order to comply with federal rules, talks about some other things. So, again, merely what we're asking them to do is to update the report of the rules that they had done 10 years ago. This dovetails with something that a couple things that the governor had done in a bill that was passed last year by Representative Beard. First of all, the Pollution Control Agency and the University of Minnesota was given an appropriation to update water quality rules and to bring a report to the legislature on January 15th of 2013. The governor has an EQB report out on environmental review rules that is due asked the EQB to bring all the environment agencies together to update on environmental review rules by November 15th of 2012. And the governor also has his Minnesota Business First stop where he wants the agencies to start working with DEED to the goal is to, well, I can't think of how it is, but to bring everybody together and start working on making kind of a one-stop shop and it more simple to get things done for business here in the state of Minnesota. So we've got those three things going on. We're asking merely for them, Representative Simon and committee members, to update what they did 10 years ago. It's a matter of going through the report that they had 10 years ago, looking through the changes that they've made over the past 10 years, and moving forward. So I don't think that this would be a burden.
Representative Simon.
Thank you. Can you give us an idea what they did 10 years ago? Is this, what kind of volume are we talking about? Is it a phone book?
I can do that. I don't have the copies on me. Department of Agriculture's report was 6 pages long. The Pollution Control Agency was, I'm going to say about 50 pages long. Mr. Chair and members and Representative Simon, and then it goes down from there. The volume goes down from there. What they did, Mr. Chair, committee members and Representative Simon, is they went through their chapters of the rules and they updated like in about between a paragraph and a page over each of the chapters of the rules and gave everybody an update or a report on the rule.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you. So, if I understand what you're saying that they did something similar to this 10 years ago. It was anywhere from 6 to 50 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what they would be doing, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I understand you to be saying is they could essentially cut and paste, in a sense, what they did 10 years ago and just update what's happened in the last 10 years. Is that, in essence, what you're saying?
Ms. Burnett?
Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Simon, to a degree, yes. I mean, they have done things with rules in the past 10 years. We were able to go through the state register of the past 10 years and look at what they had done. The Pollution Control Agency either updated or amended rules in about 32 different areas. The Department of Agriculture updated or amended rules in about 15 different areas. So a lot of it would be cutting and pasting, and a lot of it would be maybe having to just look back to see exactly what changed.
Representative Simon.
Just one other question. I think one other question. Different section of the bill. This is Section 5. Pre-amendment, it was line 5.31. And it's the word expressly here. And I'm just trying to figure out how this would play out in real life. So this says that an agency can only adopt, amend, suspend, or repeal a rule if, among other things, there's express authority. Now, this works both ways. For people who want or who like a rule that's in place, it means they can't change it at all unless there's express authority, which I suppose is good if you like the current rule. And it provides protection, too, for people who think rules are made too hastily, because then it says you can't make a new rule unless you have express authority. So really, kind of both sides of this are protected by that. But what I'm wondering is, in terms of just making the rule, can you or someone help us out with what that would really mean in real life? Does it mean we have to, I mean, how explicit is express? I guess I just don't know enough about this area of the law to know what it would take for us to be satisfied that we've given an agency rulemaking authority under this.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I just want to go back to the previous question, Representative Simon, if I may, and then I'll come back to this one in just a second, because I just wanted to clarify that you're exactly correct. The starting point for bringing the new rules forward by January 15th of 2013 is not the beginning of the state of Minnesota. It's probably those reports they filed in August of 2003. That work is already done, bought and paid for. The updates since then, I have a hunch. I have some paperwork here from an example of what the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's report would look like. It is 5 or 6 pages long and updates rules that they've updated or changed or declared obsolete since the last time they did this report. It does not look like it's going to be a budget breaker or a big reach. On to the new portion of the rule in Section 5 on page 5. You know, one of the things I think that we as legislators are interested in is that they're not implying something or giving guidance and so on that can bring confusion or a gray in area. We would like the rules to be precise, and you're exactly right. It cuts both ways. It defends us, protects us, and allows us to, as a government, to assert authority where it needs to be asserted. And so we're just asking them to justify whether there's express authority to do what they're doing and they're not reaching too far or not going far enough. That's the way I see this being written, and that's the intent. Mr. Chairman, if Ms. Burnett would like to expound on it further and correct or amplify my remarks, she certainly can. Do you need to do that?
Ms. Burnett?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Simon, I think that Representative Beard has adequately answered the question.
Representative Simon.
Just one other question. I think it's important to get this on the record. So is it your view that if we pass this now with the word expressly in this, would this allow someone to challenge a 20-year-old rule, let's say, that person says did not have express authority back in 1992 or not?
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly hope that if there was ambiguity about rules passed previously, that they would bring it either to the LCC or to the legislature. The bill is very clear, though, that rules stay in effect unless they're expressly called for by the LCC or the legislature, in which case they have to take bill form and come before this legislature in the next legislative session, or they remain or become law. Now, if you're talking about a challenge in court, I'm not qualified to speak to that, Representative Simon. But perhaps this is a very good question, and I want to be sure we're not setting up a minefield here we don't intend to, and I know that's the intent of your question. Let me just describe briefly, members, the path of the bill. You'll notice that the Senate file has been on hold while we do, no aspersions on our Senate friends, we do the heavy lifting and betting over here. This question, going forward, we can certainly take up and make sure that our Senate authors and co-authors are aware of it. if that becomes an issue. I don't think it is. That's not the intent. Thank you for letting me put that on the record.
Okay. Well,
Representative Simon.
I just wanted to say, again, I really appreciate your work on this. I know, Mr. Chair, we have other matters to take care of. This is the, what, second visit to this committee.
Yes.
And I know you have other stops, but I really do want to commend you, Representative Beard and Ms. Burnett and Mr. Grooms for working hard on this. So, you know, I'm going to have to look at this over as it's been amended, but I'm going to vote for it going out of this committee because I think you've done great work on this. I still might have some questions down the road that we can have Please. Offline, but thanks.
Representative Kahn.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, we talked about this bill a little bit, and I told you that a very long time ago, in Representative Greiling's first year, we set up a rules group, and we had extensive hearings on rules and extensive studies on the total issue of rules, and I accused you of kind of doing a wimpy bill compared to what we tried to do, and I'm not sure that it's still, and it's too specific, so I don't know if you got to talk to Representative Greiling, but of course I went to talk to Representative Greiling, who I knew since it was a traumatic, and it was proceeding on a bipartisan basis, and we were very anxious until the chief Republican negotiated with us, totally wimped out, so we didn't get to do anything. But the two specifics that Representative Greiling remembered that we tried to do was get rid of any generic rulemaking that any agency had. So just immediate delete any line that gave any agency generic rulemaking. And the second thing, and that might be done by this language on page 5, but we didn't want any rulemaking done unless there was statutory authority to set rules. Mm-hmm. And it could, statutory authority could be such for DNR that you may set hunting season rules or something like that. It didn't have to be, you have to set these days for this season or something. And so if you've studied the issue, do you know if those two things are still problems? Or should we be looking to amend this bill to give it a little teeth?
Representative Beard.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, thank you. Yes, wimpy bill. We did have that offline. And I'm thank you for putting it on the record. I suppose it's in the eye of the beholder. Of course, hearing from some of the agencies, they were just absolutely convinced that I was the biggest, meanest bully to come out of the legislature for a while because look at all the work I was assigning them and beating up on them and so on and so forth. So we tried to accommodate and make it as I consider it reasonable as possible. I suppose it could be seen as wimpy. And we say that tongue-in-cheek. I understand that, Representative, just to be clear. But I would like this bill to pass and be signed by the governor. I have not seen in any of his veto messages yet that he is looking for robustness or non-wimpiness, but he is looking for cooperation and bipartisan spirit of good governance, and that's where I'm trying to craft the bill. I don't know that it can be seen as whatever the opposite of wimpy is at the moment and still get through the floor and get through the governor's office. So, although my intention is, just by shining light, further light by adding the LCC and the ranking members and making every rule change coming forward be memoed and copied that way, I think that does, just the fact that it even comes to light and we're pulled more into the loop is an important development. As I mentioned in one of my comments, this isn't just about the nasty old agencies piling rules upon rules. It's about us doing our job and giving us a little more tool and a little more opportunity to do our job as the legislators as well.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, as far as I know, I'm the only legislator who ever brought a rule before whatever the process is. So, you know, I have a little familiarity with it and got a little bit of a change to the rule, so made it at least a little bit better, although, of course, they didn't do exactly what I wanted them to do, which they should have done. But, you know, I will discuss this. Are you going to be amenable to a Greiland Kahn amendment that would add some strength in terms of getting rid of generic rules and instead of requiring, which, as I said, this section may do, yes, but some language that would require express statutory language before authorization before a rule is crafted.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, as long as it's a bipartisan one that the governor will be okay with, yes, I would certainly entertain that matter. Representative Kahn, and of course there's some other key DFLers who have signed on to the bill because they think it's heading in the right direction. We don't want to jettison them as well. So that's, it's a delicate balancing act that, that the author's trying to do while trying not to appear wimpy at the same time. But
well, I'm sure we'll help you along.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have some folks who have requested a chance to testify. First, Greta Gauthier from Ag, Department of Ag. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greta Gauthier, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on the latest iteration of House File 2169. First of all, I would like to thank Representative Beard for the changes that he made in the amendment today. We are grateful for those. However, there are still some issues here that I'd like to clarify for the committee. First of all, except for the sunset language, which the Sunset Commission, of course, probably wasn't around when the original statutes in Chapter 14 pertaining to legislative objection to rules, Sunset Commission wasn't around. So in a separate from the requirements on the Sunset Commission, a lot of what's in this bill, most of what's in this bill, already exists in statute, Mr. Chairman. In 3.305 sub 8, two members of the LCC or five legislators can object to a rule and require it to be pulled in for a hearing. The chairs of the ranking, the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees with policy and budget committees with jurisdiction over the subject matter already get the SONAR, the Statement of Need and Reasonableness, that's in 14.131, the Notice of Intent to Adopt a Rule, that's the first notification that agencies send out, that's in 14.116. Also in 14.116, it says that within 2 years of getting new authority to pass to make rules, an agency has to also send all this information to the authors of the bills that granted that authority. In 14.126, if a standing committee that has jurisdiction votes that a rule may not be adopted, an agency cannot adopt a rule. And the speaker or the majority leader determine whether or not a committee has jurisdiction. In addition, in 14.127, an agency has to determine if the cost of implementing a rule is greater than $25,000 for any one business with 50 employees or less, or if an ALJ disapproves of an agency determination on that, then the statute says that there can be an exemption granted and the rules will not apply until the rule has been passed into a law by the legislature. There are a couple of exemptions for that. The governor can issue a waiver, but it still shows that even if he does issue a waiver, he has to notify the speaker and the majority leader. So there, Mr. Chairman, are five spots already where agencies are already sending not to just to the LCC, but to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees, budget and policy, with jurisdiction over the subject area, all of this information. In order to get on a list to receive information about rulemaking from an agency, the statute says all you have to do is send an email. So a lot of what's in this bill, Mr. Chairman, I think is redundant, and I think it's an issue between the legislature and getting the proper communications or whatever. And I don't know that a lot of what's in this bill is necessary in order for the chairs to receive this information. They're already getting quite a bit of it. That's my first point. Secondly, the cost, which you're right, the agencies haven't computed it because it's changed a couple of times, and we appreciate that. But the According to the new amendment adopted today and the way the bill stands now, compared to the report required by the legislature and a law it passed in 2000, there's two new things required now that were not required in 2000. First of all, as the bill stands now, it requires for every single rule. So we have our rules in chapters. For example, at Ag, we have 22 chapters, but each chapter has numerous subdivisions because they get to be very, very technical, dealing with food safety, with application of pesticides, etc., for our agency. The new law says, or the new bill here says, for each rule, and that's on line 1.16 of the amendment, and then on 1.18 it says we have to state, 1.17, number 2 there, we have to assess any difference between the proposed rule and any existing federal regulation, and we have to do a specific analysis of the need and reasonableness of every single one of those differences. That is not something we were required to do in 2000, Mr. Chairman, and that will require quite a bit of time. Especially for my, I can speak for my own agency now, some of our food code that, you know, as the delegate of the Food and Drug Administration, we implement the federal food code. Some of the federal food code goes back into the previous century, not just 20 years, but 30 or 40 years, Mr. Chairman, and some of those files are on microfiche. So it will take considerable amount of time to go back, record all that information, and prepare all these reports for every single rule. The report in 2000, and yes, the Department of Agriculture's report was 6 pages long, and the PCA's report wasn't 50 pages long, it was 27 pages long. But that's because we did it by chapter of rules, or a major subgroup under a chapter. And apparently that was sufficient for the legislature in 2003. All I'm saying is we can do this, but it's a big difference to do it for every single rule than to do it for chapters. We have 22 chapters at Ag. We have 600 pages of rules. And again, we'll have to go back a ways, and we're probably unique in that among other agencies. Most of them have it on computer, but we have some of ours still on microfiche. Finally, I'd like to say that just to say that the Business First Stop initiative that's underway in the administration doesn't really have anything to do with rulemaking, Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, and I've been involved with it through the Department of Agriculture. It has to do about helping businesses move through whatever they need to move through to start their to get their business going or to expand it, whatever permits or certificates they need. It's putting all the agencies in the room at the same time and getting all the processes underway in tangent so that we can get those put in place as quickly as possible. With that, Mr. Chairman, I can stand for questions.
Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have any questions for Ms. Gauthier before I make a few comments. If I'm going to have the floor for just a moment, just a couple of comments here. You know, we've met offline with the agencies and their representatives to talk about what they did in the 2003 reports and to try to plumb the depths of how much work they think it is. We were just some tongue-in-cheek joshing here a few moments ago about a bill that's becoming wimpy and actually needs teeth in it. Mr. Chairman, I've tried to be as accommodating as possible to the governor's representatives and the agencies, and I'm not sensing that there's really deep appreciation for what we've tried to do, because this again is about, it's a two-way street. On the one side, we're trying to shine light. We're trying to educate legislators of the authority that already exists. As I mentioned in my opening statements, both in last committee and in this committee when I was here last Thursday, this bill isn't about breaking a lot of new ground. It's about coalescing into one bill the authority that we already have. And we felt that was important when we drafted this bill because of two veto letters that were referenced, one by Governor Pallente back in 2003 on a rulemaking reform bill Republicans brought forward, and another one last year by Governor Dayton asserting that they didn't want legislative encroachment into the executive branch's authority. This is an important premise to take note of and to be respectful of. So what we tried to do was to pull together all the places where it's already referenced that the legislature has the ability to assert and should assert its authority and turn up the light just a little bit by adding some new reporting points. Ms. Gauthier is exactly correct that anybody can ask to be notified. But what we're trying to do is to assert our authority that when rules come forward specifically that we did not ask for in legislation, and they do that routinely, that we have a chance to comment or pull them out and turn them into bills, into legislation. Asking for reports on what they've done in the last 10 years seems to be where they don't think the bill is very wimpy. And I'm not speaking tongue-in-cheek now. I'm being very direct. I'm growing a little weary of the hue and the cry that this is an overreach and it's too much work and they can't perform the work and so on and so forth. But that's for this committee. This is a finance committee. You should be asking them that questions, in my opinion. I will work with them. This bill will be progressing through the Senate, and I'll be working with our Senate authors as well to make reasonable accommodations where we can for the cost of complying. But at the end of the day, the folks who are approaching Business One Stop, the folks who are actually hiring people and building this state, are telling me that there is an absolute avalanche of regulations coming, not so much from St. Paul, but from Washington. But St. Paul is the one that implements what Washington does. And we should be aware of that at this level, because some of us will be moving on to the federal level. Some of us have some influence at the federal level. We should be aware of those things. Mr. Chairman, as I said in my opening remarks, this isn't just about beating up on the bad old agencies, because most of the time they're doing exactly what we've asked them to do or what Washington's asked them to do. It's about putting us back into the loop and helping us find toeholds where we can assert legislative authority over the rulemaking process without impinging on the executive's power. That's what House Bill 2169 is about. That's what I'm trying to do here, and I appreciate the good work you're helping me do as we make a good bill better and as we move this through the process. But I can't hold hands with and worry about, I guess, making the agencies feel like they have no additional work. If that's their feeling, Mr. Chairman, I guess that's just the way it is.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to House File 2169? Seeing that no one else wishes to be heard, further discussion on the part of the committee with regard to the bill as amended. If not, all in favor of, I will renew the motion that House File 2169 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The bill will move forward to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Beard.
Thank you, committee. I really appreciate it.
I understand, Representative Gunther, you have some out-of-town folks here.
That's correct.
For your bill, let's then move to House File 1988. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gunther, you want to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House File 1988 to pass and be sent to capital investment.
Okay, Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, a couple years ago we had a 13-inch rain that went through Truman, Minnesota and most of my district. In Truman, over 70% of the basements were full of water. And you say, why doesn't this bill go to PFA? Well, I'm sorry, PFA doesn't cover flood damage. And FEMA doesn't cover flood damage in houses that are still full of water unless they go over the first floor. If they go into the house, basement's full, goes into the kitchen, they cover it. If it's just down to the basement, floorboards, no coverage. FEMA doesn't cover it. PFA doesn't cover it. A town that has as many basements flooded as they did is in dire straits. Now, Truman is a community that every time we have 2 inches of rain, a fairly substantial portion of the basements get water in them. It's gone that way for so long.
It's okay.
That many of the houses in Truman cannot get flood insurance. So they're really stuck. And like all small communities, they went through a flood that they just went through. They are strapped for cash. They're putting this bill up here to ask for $1,250,000 to pay for half of the flood, the problems they're having. they have 12-inch, 18-inch sewer mains going into 12-inch sewer mains. The existing engineer did not do that. However, it's not a good situation when you got an 18-inch sewer main going into a 12-inch formula for disaster. And with that, Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to have the City Administrator Monty Roman say a few words about this project. He's been working on it a long time. It's very frustrating for the people in the City of Truman.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Monty Roman. I'm the City Clerk Treasurer for the City of Truman.
Welcome, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing the City of Truman to testify this morning. As I said, I'm Monty Roman, the Truman City Clerk, and also representing Truman today are our Mayor, Lynn Brownlee, and City Engineer Greg Mitchell from Bolton & Mank, the firm of Bolton & Mank. Truman is a city of 1,100 residents located in Martin County in south-central Minnesota with a totally agricultural-based economy. Our community was at ground zero during the severe flooding that occurred in southern Minnesota in September 2010. As Representative Gunther mentioned, we received over 13 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. We received major devastation to both public and private property. Over 70% of our residential homes received basement flooding and loss of personal belongings. Governor Tim Pawlenty visited our community the day following the flood to see firsthand the devastation. He called the legislature into special session shortly after that, and the legislature graciously passed legislation to help fund 25% of the public infrastructure costs and public cleanup costs that we incurred by the cities in the presidential disaster area. Many FEMA officials were on hand the day after the flood also to tour the town with Governor Pawlenty, and after the flooded area was proclaimed a presidential disaster area, FEMA funded the other 75% of the nearly $200,000 in public costs that were incurred. We would like to extend a sincere thank you to all the legislators for their financial support during that critical time in our community. Our residents, however, were not as lucky, as FEMA was unable to help them personally with their property loss. Since we were not located in a flood zone, residents were unable to get national flood insurance. Many residents were left to replace personal property at their own cost. We have brought pictures along of the flood damage, and they're being passed around the table there. We have suffered other major flooding events in 1993, 2005, from larger rainfalls in the range of 4 to 5 inches. Most of Truman's stormwater system was constructed in the 1950s and has trunk lines that are very undersized for even 2 and 3 inch rainfalls. Truman has invested heavily in the last 3 years to address our undersized stormwater system, which is the number one public health and safety priority in our community. In 2009, our Phase 1 project consisted of us working cooperatively with Martin County to extend an open ditch 1 mile to Truman to eliminate an 18-inch diameter pipe, which was our only outlet for stormwater from Truman. We owe $400,000 for this much-needed improvement, which we borrowed with Martin County through PFA. In 2010, after two heavy 2 and 3 inch rains in back-to-back evenings in June and the flood in September of that year, the city constructed Phase 2, which was 1,500 feet of 60-inch diameter outfall pipe from the new open ditch into the city to connect to our undersized collector trunk lines. We borrowed another $400,000 from PFA to complete this project. So we are in debt to the PFA and the state of Minnesota for $800,000 at this point for these two recent improvements to the system, which we are paying for with a tax levy and a brand new stormwater utility fee to each resident and business. The third and last major part of our plan to eliminate flooding in Truman is the piece that we are here today to discuss and to request your financial help through the bonding bill. Phase 3 consists of running larger 42-inch diameter trunk lines to two areas of town that have repeated flooding every time we get a large rainfall. These larger trunk lines will replace the 12-inch and 15-inch diameter trunk lines that are currently being used and are severely overloaded with other 8, 10, and 12-inch diameter lines feeding into them. This phase of the comprehensive project has a price tag of approximately $2.5 million and is very unaffordable to our residents and the few businesses we do have. I appreciate your time this morning, and Mr. Chairman, I would ask you permission to let our city engineer explain a few details of the project. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Greg Mitchell. I'm with Bolton & Mink. I'm the city engineer for the city of Truman. And what I've handed out here today is just a preliminary sketch or drawing showing what the city is proposing to construct for a new storm sewer with this project. It's showing in the what I'll call the burnt orange color. Basically, it's about 9 or 10 blocks of complete reconstruction. As Monty said, we're looking at putting in a 42-inch diameter storm sewer, which is extended from the 60-inch storm sewer that's been constructed over the three previous improvement projects. Those previous improvement projects are showing up in green on the lower part of the drawing there. So in 2009, as Monty said, they, in conjunction with the county, they extended the open ditch to the west side of Highway 15. And then the phase one improvement was to extend the 60-inch storm sewer up into the first part of the south part of the town. And then the phase two project, we took that next step with the extending the 60-inch pipe up to the school area. So now the this project, as we're discussing, is to take that to the next step. Maybe just to give a little background, as Monty said, and Representative Gunther also mentioned, the existing storm sewer system that the city has now is severely undersized. The largest pipe prior to any of the recent improvements was 18-inch diameter, which is in consideration of storm sewer structures or pipe, very small pipe. Their average size pipe is probably around a 10-inch, so it does not take much of a rainfall event to surcharge that system. I guess in with that, so really the big the main emphasis here is to reduce the flooding for these community or this community. So that's one aspect, but then a second aspect or problem that we have here in town is that we've been finding or that there are known cross connections with the sanitary sewer. And with part of this project, and we have replaced or I should say repaired two of those cross connections with the previous improvement projects from 2010 and 2011, but we're also going to tackle some of those known cross connections, and I'm sure there's more out there that we have not located yet. We'll find those during construction, but that will also help to keep the storm sewer out of the sanitary sewer, which is also contributing to the basement backup and flooding. I should back up. The overall project that we have here is not just storm sewer improvement. It's also sanitary sewer replacement to remove those conflicts. And, of course, with the construction, overall construction, we'll be replacing the street surface and also the water main as part of this project. So with that, if anybody has any questions, I'll try to answer those.
Any questions from committee members? Mayor, did you wish to make any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Greg and Monty are far more eloquent than I am, but I just would like to say thank you for hearing us today. I am very passionate about our little town of Truman. We're just very small, very close-knit community. Our river does not run through it, and yet we have significant flooding with even moderate rainfall amounts. And the things that people are losing and have lost are the things that money and insurance couldn't even replace, but things that we all probably store in our basement, like family photos and things from our ancestors, Christmas decorations and things like that. Our plea today is to ask for your assistance in helping us to afford to create a safe and secure home for us all. Thank you.
Mayor, would you, for the record, state your name and into the mic, too?
Lynn Brownlee, Mayor of Truman.
Thank you. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is, I don't know who is best able to answer this question, but basically, I guess two parts first. So if we fund this project, you believe it will resolve the flooding issue in Truman? I mean, will this be a fix and an ongoing one? And then second, could you just summarize what the local contribution to this is? Again, I think you've touched on these things, but I just wonder if you could be pretty straightforward, clear about that.
Well, I can try to answer the first question. As far as the flooding, this will greatly reduce any future problems. of course, we can't eliminate flooding. There's always going to be that storm or situation where maybe inlets are plugged or whatever the case may be, that there could still be potential for flooding. But with the storm sewer system, as I mentioned before, the existing pipes that they have are severely undersized. Even some of the smaller ones are even 6-inch diameter, which does not take much of a rain event to plug those or surcharge those. So we're going now from what was an 18-inch outlet to a 60-inch outlet, so we have considerable more capacity and we'll be able to get that water out of those low-lying areas quicker before it becomes a problem. And then again, also with the sanitary sewer situation with the cross connections, by eliminating those, that eliminates the, or will again reduce the possibility of getting a sewer backup in the basements also.
And Representative Winkler?
I think the clerk probably can answer the question about the local contribution.
Yes, Administrator?
As far as our local share, we are working with some the federal officials too, and also with the Homeland Security Emergency Management here to try to get some federal funding. But we also have a couple of street bonds that are coming due here shortly that we could possibly use too for our share. But we are working to try to get some federal funds too to help with that other share. We're working on that very diligently.
Representative Winkler?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to get kind of a global picture. This is a $1.25 million request. You've got three phases of the project. I just wonder if you could. I think you mentioned that you undertook the first two, but I'm not. I just wonder if you could just kind of clarify this three-phase approach to this resolution, and where have the other funds come from to do the first two? You could just clarify that.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman. The first two phases we did work through PFA. We worked with Martin County on the first one on phase one for the ditch. In phase two, we worked solely on our own with PFA and received low-interest loans, which we're paying back to the state over a 20-year period. We did it in phases to see if it would help. We didn't want to spend any more than we had to, so we did phase one of the ditch, hoping that it would take pressure off. It didn't work totally. We put the 60-inch pipe in. It has helped in some areas, but this phase will really take the pressure off the remaining really bad areas of town that are being severely flooded. So we did it in phases because we wanted to make sure we... if it took care of the problem, we didn't want to have to do more than we had to. So this phase now is so much more expensive because now we're tearing the streets. The first two phases were through cornfields and through black dirt around by the school area there. Now we're getting the streets, and it gets very, very expensive, about $200,000 a block, and it's just way more than we can handle for a city our size.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, just one follow-up, I think, for Representative Gunther. You said at the beginning the reason why this phase three isn't qualified for PFA. I don't remember the reason you said, but I'm wondering, I don't know if this is a problem that other communities have, but whenever we have an issue of storm, of flooding, I think it always begs the question of, are we just solving one community's problem and ignoring a lot of others? Are we opening ourselves up to bonding requests every year for projects like this, or should we be looking at expanding the PFA program to include things like this? So I wonder if you could just kind of touch on whether this really is a one-time situation in one community or something we should be looking at broadly.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, there's a lot of circumstances that affect Truman, where the chairman lives. Water flows north through Truman, and it flows north for quite a distance. And this can cause part of the problem, but the simple fact is that Truman was mis-engineered in the 50s, and it is not covered by FEMA, and it is not covered by the PFA, because PFA doesn't cover flood events. The FEMA doesn't cover flood events if it doesn't go over the basement level. It goes in your kitchen instead of staying in the basement. They cover it. If they just stays in the basement, they don't cover it. So that's why the FEMA can't be covering this. We didn't take this through FEMA. Number one, FEMA isn't charged to take care of this, and I don't go past the priority system that FEMA has established through the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I think the integrity of that priority list has got to always be maintained. And I think this is just a circumstance when we have a community that has been paying and paying and can no longer take care of the full bill.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, so I mean, I guess kind of the bottom line, Representative Gunther, is there was an engineering problem in the 1950s. The community's been living with it ever since. And part of the reason why this is kind of a standalone or single community issue is because of the original problem in laying out the storm sewer pipes. And that's why a one-time fix from the state is not going to open us up to every community saying we've got some stormwater problems and we'd like you to come fix it.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
There are no further questions. Thank you for being here today. We're going to lay this over. On Thursday, the committee is going to finalize our set of recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee for all of the bonding requests that have come through our committee. We've got a two-page list, and we've got a long list of, about 22 projects that come under the Public Facilities Authority category. And as you just heard, this is one that is not covered by PFA. On Thursday, members, we will go through this list and identify for you all of those that are PFA qualified and those that are not, so that we can consider that as we submit our recommendations to capital investment. So with that, thank you very much
for being
here.
Thank you.
So Thursday is D-Day, committee members, on our bonding proposals. We will now move back to the top of the agenda and apologize to the folks that thought they were first and got deferred. Sometimes we have to take care of things in a different order. The first report we're going to get today is on the Swift Accounting System, Lori Moe, Jim Mannion, and Tracy Hatch. I don't know if all three of you are going to be at the table together, or welcome to the committee, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Lori Moe. I'm Assistant Commissioner of the Accounting Services Division at MMB. With me is Tracy Hatch. Tracy, Ms. Hatch is the CFO at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And also joining me later will be Jim Mannion, who is the full-time program director for the SWIFT project implementation. In our presentation today, we'll update you on the activities since we were last before you, describe some of the agency impacts, update you on the current status, and talk about activities related to the project for the coming months. As you know, SWIFT stands for Statewide Integrated Financial Tools, and it's the backbone of our financial management infrastructure, providing statewide accounting and procurement applications. It's a fully integrated commercial off-the-shelf software package. It provides vendor-delivered product to process, track, and report on all of our accounting and procurement activity. It's the system that tracks all of our revenues, that makes payments to program recipients, to schools, to vendors, and to other business partners of the state. It contains information for agency management, our comprehensive financial statements, and decision-making statewide. And with the installation of these modules, for the first time, we're operating all of our statewide administrative systems on a common, fully integrated software. With that, we gain the efficiencies of a common look and feel across the modules, a common tool set for support by our technical staff, regular maintenance and upgrade path is provided by the vendor. SWIFT has now been our accounting system of record since July 1st of 2011. Slide 4 gives you some perspective on the volume of transaction processing that's being managed with the system. The project has been a major statewide undertaking. We've had a project team of over 100 people working on the project at MMB since the project was funded in 2009. In addition, there's been considerable effort at all of the impacted state agencies. They have participated in the early planning stages. Throughout the implementation, they completed dozens of configuration assignments. These ranged from interface development to security to training activities. In addition, 10 of the largest agencies did some of their own training. They've also had to modify business practices, and they've had to learn new software. Since the go-live, we've continued our agency support efforts. In addition to a help desk, which is responding to specific agency questions, we've also offered numerous classes, workshops, and job aids to assist agencies through the learning curve of a new system. And I just can't emphasize enough how much the scope of the impact this has had on state agencies. They've been our partners from the early planning stages. We've also had active agency participation in both an executive and a steering committee. And Ms. Hatch, who is with me here today from the Department of Transportation, is one of the members of our executive committee. And I'd like to turn this over to her briefly to hear some remarks from her about the impacts of the system on the Department of Transportation.
Welcome, Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here. For the record, my name is Tracy Hatch. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I just want to make a few quick comments about the impacts of the state agencies, and I think really they ought not be underestimated. We have had a big undertaking here in partnership with MMB, but I think we've had a lot of really good success as well. It is a statewide project, and MMB has certainly been the lead, but as Ms. Moe said, it has taken a significant effort on the part of agencies working with MMB and MMB staff on the project to make it successful. This project has integrated a number of business processes that were not integrated previously in the MAPS accounting system. Just to hit a few of the high points for you, things like general ledger, budget, accounts payable, accounts receivable, strategic sourcing, electronic procurement, supplier contracts, vendor maintenance, citizens portal, and three in particular that were significant for MnDOT specifically was the consumable inventory. In fact, we were the first agency to implement consumable inventory because of our significant inventory needs, as well as fixed asset management and federal billing. This project has required coordination between the project teams and the state agencies because of the complex nature of the system. We have, for example, increased our touch points on the system. Under MAPS, we had about 250 users. In SWIFT, we have over 1,000 users. So that's a whole new level of training and integration into our business practices. We have multiple funding sources that come with our own specific reporting needs. We have cost allocation that we allocate, very, very detailed cost allocation across all of our projects, back to a number of hundreds of different federal funding sources. We also converted all historical project data, in some cases 30 years worth of data on projects crossing multiple accounting systems, so even pre-MAPS accounting. It had previously required duplication of each historical financial transaction in order to balance, and I'm pleased to say out of several billion dollars, we balanced to within $17, so that was quite an undertaking. We also have realized, I think, a number of the benefits of a centralized system. And for example, we have had a number of business process changes at MnDOT specifically. We've eliminated the need for some side systems. We have standardized grants management across our entire department, within our offices and across other state agencies as well. We have implemented or will be implementing additional workflows to eventually replace a lot of the manual paper passing and transactions that have taken place, and that will not only help us to track where the paper is a little bit more efficiently, but also to manage the approval process. We have had many business application replacements. We've retired or replaced six individual business applications, such as our consumable inventory application and our fixed asset application. We continue to work towards the replacement of an additional 12 applications by re-engineering the business practices and optimizing opportunities presented by the SWIFT system. We have modified parts of five other applications to accept data from data extracts directly out of SWIFT, and thereby eliminating duplicate data entry. And we've developed and implemented 19 system interfaces, ensuring MnDOT data is loaded directly from SWIFT into these other subsystems. And you may know this already, but SWIFT has also reduced the number of applications used for contracts. It has eliminated GFS and AGPS. And so we recognize that it's been a significant undertaking, and we appreciate the partnership with MMB, but we do think that the project is definitely worthwhile.
Ms. Hatch, can you give an estimate as to at what point you feel you will be fully implemented for your department?
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I think that Ms. Moe and Mr. Manning will probably more specifically address that, but I believe approximately a year from now, it's the expectation that the rest of the remaining functionality will be rolled out. We have seen a significant learning curve with this system, and so we expect that to continue for at least a short time following the full implementation. But I would hope that perhaps a year from this June, the system will be fully implemented and integrated into the department.
And another question would be, have you identified any particular applications here that at this point you find very, very difficult to fully implement, that you may have to change your approach, or at this point does it look as though no major issues are going to surface here as you implement?
Mr. Chair, another good question. I do think that there have been challenges throughout the implementation, and as you get kind of into a system, you learn what you didn't know before you started, and I think that there is still obviously a possibility for glitches to occur and for business processes to be changed and redesigned as we go forward, in particular with the functionality that has not yet been implemented. But I do think that we have a really good track record, and I think the MMB staff, and particularly the project staff, have been very open and very willing to help us when we've addressed those kind of issues. So as we see something, we bring it up, we put it on the radar for MMB, and they've been very successful thus far in helping us to resolve those issues. So I expect that to continue in the future.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, thank you to you and your staff. So we know these things don't get done between 8 and 5, Monday to Friday. It's a lot of work, so we appreciate it. You mentioned that not all modules are up. Could you explain which ones are not, and if there were any big problems behind that, if there's reasons why they weren't?
Ms. Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, there is a second phase of the project scheduled, and the first phase that went live on July 1st essentially replaced all of the existing functionality in the previous map system. It also added a number of new modules. Ms. Hatch referred to the inventory and the fixed assets modules, among other new functionality. But there is a number of components of the new procurement functionality that will be implemented in the second phase. It's more portions of modules than entire modules. There's also some of the reporting functionality that was deferred to the second phase. And both of those pieces will be rolled out. Most of those components will be rolled out in the balance of the calendar year. There are a couple of pieces in January and February of 13.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Moe, I know we did some, I can't remember the exact structure, but some kind of a lease-based financing arrangement. How are we doing relative to the original planned budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, we are still managing within our original budget. While we had some changes to the schedule, our original contract with our system implementer was a fixed price contract, and so we continue to manage within our existing budget.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I know I ask this question every time you come here, Ms. Moe. I know the intent was to not do a ton of modifications and to have the agencies conform to the the business flows of the of the new software, and obviously they're pretty flexible in new software, so there's probably some variation. But do you have a sense for what percentage of a standard business process everybody's been able to conform to? Are you 90%, 95% all common now across all agencies in terms of the way the actual flows work?
Ms. Wolf?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, all of the agencies are using the software. There are some differences between agencies because of their unique program characteristics. We have agencies with subsystems that are interfaced within the SWIFT system. In terms of modifications, I've struggled before to put a percentage number in response to that question, but I can tell you that we had a rigorous process for reviewing any customization that was proposed for the system, and while we had planned from the beginning that it would be necessary to do some modifications, we have stayed very close to that estimate. We have not, we have had some that we didn't expect to do that we ended up doing, but we also had some that we had planned to do that we found business process modification to avoid doing that. And so those have balanced out.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then lastly, I ask this question too every time you're here. Have you been tracking the savings or the return on this investment? This is a big deal. Do we know where we're actually driving savings and efficiencies? Have you been documenting that or calculating that?
Ms. Moe?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, that's a difficult question to quantify as well. Certainly during this initial period of implementation, as agencies learn the new business processes, learn the new software, work through the learning curve and resolving issues, we know that there have been some inefficiencies. We're seeing improvement in that as time goes by. I think we're going to, in terms of savings, we are going to see some cases where there is small incremental savings that will free people up to do more value-added tasks, but which will be very difficult to measure and to capture. We have other situations where by providing new functionality with this system and avoiding the need to continue various side systems or subsystems, we will avoid the cost of replacing or updating those other systems. At one point in the project, there was an estimate of nearly 100 side systems that would no longer need to be maintained. We expect in the second phase there will be savings associated with some of the better analytical data that will be available surrounding the procurement functionality, and I'm hopeful that will be something that will be able to measure.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a quick comment. I appreciate the first year of something like this is probably largely operationally focused, but I really hope that you know, the way you've done this and what you've been driving towards is an ability to provide a higher level of service, eliminate redundant costs, find ways to improve the level of service, eliminate redundant costs, find ways to improve the business processes so you can even take entire steps out and have savings related to that. And if we didn't, or if the project was just focused on bolting new technology under everything that's currently going on, then wow, we've missed a huge opportunity. So I would request that as you come forward now, as you're kind of moving into phase two and can start to look at what happened in phase one, that you start to bring some reporting back to us on where are the improvements and where is the return on investment, what was the cost of those 100 side systems that we're not maintaining. I don't remember the exact number, 85 million sticks in my head. That's a really, really, really big system and a big project, and we should be able to see what we're getting for that investment besides just new technology.
Ms. Mo, the last time you were here, we talked about some excessive delays in the state making reimbursements to people who or entities that had money owed to them from the state. Has that problem been overcome, or are we still having issues with regard to delay of payments?
Mr. Chairman, members, if I could draw your attention to slide 7, that the issue of payments to vendors is something we wanted to update you on today. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Mannion to join me at the table. But to address your question, we certainly have seen improvements both in the promptness of payments being made to the various vendors that agencies do business with. We have also seen improvement in the in our ability to respond to vendor questions as they also are dealing with learning to understand a new system and seeing a new face on the website that they go to for information.
Mr. Mannion, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Mannion. I'm the program director for the SWIFT project. Thank you for inviting me back. Pleasure to be here. There's a few slides that in the handout that I'll probably cover to you. The first one deals with the vendor update and how we're doing on providing payments to the vendors. It involves, first and foremost, the self-registration process of the vendors. I think the last time we were here, I mentioned there was over 200,000 vendors that the state of Minnesota has on its records. Those were largely converted, but the vendors themselves needed to self-register. And once they self-registered, the whole process itself has gone quite a bit smoother than it did in the initial introduction. And we've also made some changes as well to the website that the vendors use to improve the process so they can identify how they can bid correctly and fast on some of the solicitations that the state does. I also have a little number in here of the number of hits, which is the number of accesses that the vendors do against our supplier portal. It's running about 8,000 to 10,000 hits a day. So there's a very extensive activity going on, and the vendors to come in to see what solicitations are being made, to see where the payments have been made to them, and the status of those payments, where they've been approved. So we think we've made tremendous progress with the vendors. The help desk itself, which is a separate help desk that the SWIFT project provides, has been getting in the range of 50 to 70 calls a day from vendors, which is actually comparable to the number of calls that we used to get under the old MAP system after it had been in place for roughly 15 years. So its volume level is dropping off substantially, which is a reflection, I think, of the payments being made in a more timely manner. The vendor calls themselves do occasionally spike. They've actually recently spiked as a result of the fact that it's now a new calendar year. The vendors are looking for their 1099 forms and some information on that. So that volume goes up and down, but we're generally answering those calls within 24 hours, sometimes 48 hours. So we feel pretty good about the progress that we've made on that. As far as the current status is concerned, the SWIFT project itself, or the SWIFT application, is handling increasing transactional volumes. It started out in the July timeframe at a fairly low level since there wasn't a lot of activity going on at that time, but it has increased gradually over the last 6-7 months. One of those examples I've listed here is the Department of Revenue is issuing refund checks. Those have been running around 5,000 to 6,000 transactions on a daily basis. SWIFT system is able to absorb that and to process those transactions in a timely manner. Just as a side comment for you, and on Monday, that volume pumped up to 30,000 transactions. So we have quite a bit of variability in the processing that the system does, and we feel comfortable we've been able to maintain and support that. As far as going forward, what are we working on? There is obviously existing processes that we continue to improve. Ms. Moe talked about the training sessions that we have offered to the different agencies. We find historically that the workshop sessions where the agency staff come into the SWIFT area, bring some of their work with them, and we show them how to use the system has been very effective for us and generally very well attended. So, again, I think this is all part of agencies beginning to learn, adapt, and adjust to the use of the new system, which has clearly been a challenge for them. I think it's a major, major change for them, and I think they've adapted and performed very well for that. So the next steps on page 9 is to talk a little bit about the maintenance pack. As I believe Ms. Moe mentioned, the software itself is a package software or commercial off-the-shelf software. As a result of doing a standard package like that, the vendor has an obligation to provide maintenance updates, which consists of some fixes for some minor issues with the software, some enhancements to the software, things of that nature. Those maintenance packs were frozen in late 2010 to allow us to complete the testing of the system prior to the go-live in July of 2011. It's a pretty common technique to use. You don't want to be making testing of a piece of software at the same time you're making heavy modifications to it. But it is time to go back and to look at that and to make those upgrades, and that's something we're doing now through the month of May. We're also enhancing the reporting capabilities, and we do have substantial reporting capabilities within the financial system itself. We do have a website, and that website has a series of quick reference guides so that the agencies, if they want to go in and run some report out of the system, this helps them do that. So I would encourage you and the members, if they're interested in learning more about SWIFT, to go and look at the SWIFT website. There is a substantial amount of information in that particular site. The second, or the next, the last point here is the phase two activities. This is the deferred functionality that remains. It's primarily in the procurement area. That will be done between now and the end of the end of the calendar year of 2012. And then, of course, we're preparing for the fiscal year-end close, which will be by the end of June. This will be our first time to do that. I am told by many people that it's a difficult, complex thing to do, but we are making preparations for that, and we'll be communicating that approach to the agency shortly. There is an attachment slide on the back of this. I hope you have something called a SWIFT deployment update in your packet. This is just one example of the material that we send out to the agencies. This particular one goes out to about 2,000 agency staff members. It kind of lists, in this example here, it talks about some of the classes that are going to be held. There's also a needs assessment survey. We are at the point, I think, in the project as the agency staff have begun to adapt this, to start to ask them, now that they have all this experience, what is it they need from our project team to support them going forward so that they continue to grow and use the system in an effective way. And that needs assessment went out a week or so ago, and it's due back, I believe, tomorrow. So that concludes my standard comments. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Manion, I'll ask you the same question. Are you doing it? You're obviously tracking transaction volumes and other things. Are you doing anything at the program manager level to begin documenting the business process cycle time improvements, efficiencies, cost takeout, other things that would demonstrate back to us and the taxpaying public that we've done something to actually improve what we're doing as compared to just throwing in some new technology into the same old mix?
Yeah, we do. Mr. Manion, excuse me, we do monitor a rather substantial number of transaction volumes in this system. We do know how many transactions are processed on a daily basis. We do know what the payments are and how timely they are. We do know what the volume of the interface transactions are. You saw some of the earlier volumes in here from the system itself. But I think there's other parts of this thing which are not really a transactional-driven thing, and that's what systems that we don't need to buy, the sort of the cost avoidance objective. So instead of buying a new inventory system, you can use the existing system. As Ms. Hatch indicated, there are some systems that they were going to replace. She didn't talk a lot about the Federal Highway Management application, but that's one system that they would have had to have built, and instead the SWIFT application replaced that. So I think there's both components of that that we need to track and to monitor.
Representative Downey?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just repeat my statement. I think we're at a serious flaw here. If all we're doing is tracking that we did, you know, 8 million transactions before, and now we're doing 8.5 million, that's not what I'm looking for. And I'm kind of shocked that at the program level, we actually wouldn't be looking at this thing from a business operations improvement, efficiency, effectiveness, cost takeout perspective more globally, and maybe you just haven't had time to get there. And maybe we can meet offline, and maybe you're doing more of it than you're conveying or I'm understanding here today. But I think we got a serious problem, Mr. Chair, if we don't have any sense of what this thing is getting us, even though we're almost done implementing it. We got to quickly rotate to return on investment here. Otherwise, we'll just go back to the same old with new technology, and that's a real problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I will say that we have redesigned the business processes for the system. There's a substantial number of business process documentation is out there that changed the way in which the agencies function. What we have not done yet is we have not costed that change. I think I get your point. I think that's something we do need to do.
Thank you very much for being here today for the update, and we wish you the best as you continue to implement this major change.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Next, we have an update on the new budget system. Margaret Kelly and Michelle Weber.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, will there be a report on the SWIFT system when they're complete with this, as far as a report back to us to see, as Representative Downey was just mentioning?
Ms. Moe, could you, before you leave, could you answer Representative Anderson's question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have, as we've talked about, a fair amount of work ahead of us yet with the second phase, but at any point during that phase, we're happy to come back and provide an additional update, either in the interim or at the conclusion.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to see a written report on progress that's being made and then a final report.
Okay. They will so note. Ms. Kelly.
Yes.
Representative Kahn.
Yes, I can never let a meeting of SWIFT go by without giving them a compliment on their logo, which was selected by a contest and won by an employee of DNR who gave a very accurate representation of a SWIFT.
So, welcome, Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director. With me is Michelle Weber, who is project manager for our budget planning and analysis system. I also want to recognize in the audience, I have Bruce Urich, MMB staff person, and Tara Baranoff, an MMB staff person. The three of them have been working diligently on this budget project, and we are where we are today due to their good work. The last time we were before this committee, I believe we were contemplating our next steps on redesigning our budget system, and so the purpose of today's conversation is to update you on where we are at. Our budget planning and analysis system includes the functionality to produce the base budget for the biennial budget document, as well as the governor's budget for the 2014 and 15 biennium. The system replacement at this time does not include replacing the capital budget system or the fiscal note tracking system. Both of these systems are old. They are legacy systems. They are in need of replacement. However, resources currently do not exist to update them. And so the focus and the scope of our current project relates to the biennial budget itself and only that. The budget planning and analysis system, or BPAS, is being developed with a commercial off-the-shelf multidimensional software package called Hyperion Public Sector Planning and Budgeting. It's an Oracle-based product similar to what we've used for our SWIFT project. In May of 2011, MMB purchased the Hyperion software and entered into a fixed price contract with Oracle to develop our system. The premise of the contract was to establish a partnership with Oracle in which they could learn more about public sector budgeting and enhance future versions of their off-the-shelf project. The total cost of the agreement with Oracle is $1.3 million, about half a million for licensing and support for over 300 users, about $700,000 for the system development and testing, and a little under $100,000 for implementation support as we roll the new system out. The system is being developed in a phased approach, with the first phase focusing on production of the 2014 and 15 biennial budget to fulfill the requirements of 16A. Phases 2 and 3 include developing functionality within BPAS to support legislative tracking, so tracking that your fiscal staff do that we would then be able to build into the system as well, and your staff would be able to use the system in that way. Production of the supplemental budget in the off years is a future phase of the project as well. And salary projection tools and loading agency annual budgets from BPAS into SWIFT. So currently we are planning to download information from the accounting system into our budget planning system. In a future phase, as we go through the legislative process and adopt a budget, we would be able to load that back up into the accounting system. The only phase currently funded is phase one, completing the 14 and 15 biennial budget. The implementation of phases two and three will be dependent on resources that would be identified at a future point. The timeline for the project. We started the project about 6 weeks behind schedule. We had planned to start in July 1 of this fiscal year. The state government shutdown delayed our starting of the project until later in August. August and September were dedicated to setting up the technical infrastructure of the system and establishing the system design requirements, specifying with the consultants what exactly we were trying to do with this system. We had a stakeholder committee, representative of legislative staff and agency staff and systems users. We met weekly to provide input into the design of the system. In October through January of this year, the system was built, and we are beginning the testing phase. We are also currently working on integrating the data from our SWIFT accounting system into our budget system. This includes loading historical expenditure data as well as current year budgets from agencies which we then use to create the base budget for the beginning point of the governor's budget recommendations. We're also looking at integrating FTE data that's in our SWIFT system into the budget system for each appropriation. We anticipate the system testing will be completed, the next phase of testing will begin in March, and we are anticipating that the testing will be completed sometime in April. The next phase will be the user training, opening the system up to all of those who will be using it, agency staff and legislative staff, to show them how the system is going to work. We are planning to provide instructions and training in May, with the official go-live happening sometime mid-August after the SWIFT close happens. So base budget would be available in this system by November, a statutory deadline, and the governor's budget will be published using this system in January of 2013. I wanted to talk a little bit about opportunities and challenges we have with this project. First, it's new technology, and new technology in and of itself isn't good, but our old technology we weren't going to be able to use it to build our biennial budget this time around. Given that we have new accounting software, the old software package did not speak to the new accounting software package. Also, it was such old technology that we weren't able to continue to support it. And so now with the new software package that's Oracle-based, there will be hopefully a smooth integration between our accounting system and our budget system. And as well, there will be someone on the other end of the line to be able to help us whenever we have problems with this software. This new software is more dynamic, and it provides a multi-dimensional database instead of one item of data being related directly only to one other item of data. An item of data is related to many other items of data, and so that allows us more functionality in terms of how we report out of the system. At the same time, it requires a greater level of expertise in accessing the system on the part of the user. So there will be, like we are experiencing with the SWIFT system, there will be a learning curve for folks using this new system. But I think once they are more familiar with it, they will find that it provides more information than we were able to provide with our old system. We do have limited resources and therefore a limited scope with this project. We did negotiate a fixed price agreement, and while that is a good financial position for the state to be in, it does not come without its challenges as well. That as we have found things that in the testing phase where we thought we had designed it one way and it's turning out that wasn't exactly the way it's being designed, our ability to go back and make corrections or make enhancements to the system will be limited by the resources that we have at hand. The departmental earnings report is a statutory requirement that the biennial budget document report on fee revenue by agencies. And originally we had hoped that the new budget system would be able to accommodate this reporting need, and as we worked through the design phase, this software is not able to support it at this current time. And so we have taken the departmental earnings report out of the scope of the initial project. We continue to evaluate how we will meet that requirement. We do not yet have an alternative. I think once we get our testing of this new system done, we will focus more time on meeting the requirement of the departmental earnings report. The budget book itself is a complex report for this system to produce. While we are able to produce a report that could be printed and distributed, a report that could be put online, we are not yet able with this system to produce a budget document that is accessible by all Minnesotans, particularly those people who need to use alternative sources of reading for folks who are blind. There is a glitch or a bug in the software, and the Oracle is aware of it and working diligently on trying to find a workaround, and we are providing whatever assistance we can, and we hope within the coming month that we will have resolved this issue. But at this point in time, it's something we are still working on. Another challenge is the compatibility of this document. At this point in time, the current, or of the software, of the technology, at this point in time, the Oracle software Hyperion product is not compatible with Internet Explorer 9, which is the current version that most everyone is using of Internet Explorer. And so for legislative staff, without getting compatibility, which Oracle is working on and Oracle believes will be a part of an upgrade that's coming sometime in March, without compatibility, any user would need to downgrade their Internet Explorer to version 8, which most computers don't currently use. But we are working on that and hoping that we will have an upgrade to the software before we roll this out to users. The timeline continues to pose a challenge. We started behind schedule. We sopped up any available wiggle room we had in the schedule with those first 6 weeks. We continue to push ourselves to the limit in terms of resolving some of the issues around compatibility and the budget document and testing. We are committed to going live sometime in August. We will not have a budget document if we don't meet this deadline. So while We're working on our contingency plans in the case some of these bugs don't get fixed. I just need to state it is a challenge and a risk, and we'll figure it out. But that's the update I had for you. Do you have any questions?
Questions, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kelly, I would love to know if there's going to be a report be written that we could have a kind of a snapshot of what the process was, all your opportunities, your challenges, and the things that happened, and the return on investment, and what you think is, you know, always good to hear it. If you could have a written report. I don't know if the legislation said that when we put this in place or not, but it'd be good to have a snapshot of that without, I mean, so we can read it as well as you report on it.
Ms. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to put something together when the project is completed. That'd be soon enough.
Representative Stansbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was curious, with the browsers, what version would have just come on my computer? I got a newer computer now. Is it? I'm just curious. When Internet Explorer 9 came out, and is that what's getting put on all the state employees?
Ms. Kelly?
Ms. Chair, Representative, I'm going to let Michelle take this one.
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair, my name is Michelle Weber, and I'm the project director for the new budget system. Internet Explorer 9 is an upgrade that has been made to many of the state computer systems with the transition to the new version of Windows, also is my understanding. What we've done internally within MMB is for all of the project team members, we have installed Internet Explorer 8 onto our machine so that we're able to move forward with the build. What we've been told from Oracle is that the new version of the Hyperion software includes the compatibility with Internet Explorer 9. Once a version of software comes out that is compatible with Internet Explorer 9, it will also be compatible with any previous version. So if you're still operating under an older version, you can still use the system. I, unfortunately, am not familiar with what operating system the legislature is using.
Representative Stansbury.
Thank you. And maybe just one follow-up. Is it limited to Internet Explorer? Doesn't work with Mozilla or Firefox or Chrome or all those?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, we are still testing other tools that are used to access web-based programs to see which ones it is. We have identified some that it is not compatible with, but the state operating system is Internet Explorer 9, so it shouldn't impact users.
Thanks.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, sounds like this is pretty high risk at this point. And you mentioned some contingency plans, real high level. Give us maybe a clearer sense of where the risks are. I don't imagine they're all technical, that there's other ones. What are the major risks, and what would you do if you couldn't pull this thing online in time for the next budget go-around?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, the biggest risk is the budget book that Assistant Commissioner Kelly has referenced already. And what we've been doing internally is strategizing alternatives. The software, this does get a little technical. The software produces a budget book in two different formats. It produces a PDF format, which users are familiar with. That is also the format that our previous budget book was produced with. That format is not meeting the accessibility requirements. There's also an opportunity to create an HTML format, which you can then publish directly to the web, and that is accessible. What we're having a problem with on the HTML format is once the budget book gets to a certain size, it no longer renders, and for many of our agencies, it gets to that size pretty quickly. We have been talking about there are some other publication software tools that could potentially be used. We could also build internally within our technical resources. We can report out of the system, and what we would have to do is more of a manual compilation of the budget book in order to publish it onto our web and make it available. So there are things like that that are not desirable because they get away from the functionality of sort of a push button from the system budget book. Oracle has deemed this a critical issue. They are—they have all hands on deck in their development team looking at this, and so we continue to work with them on a daily basis to try and get this resolved.
Mr. Chair, just real quick follow-up. Yeah. So it sounds to me like the reporting or the publishing, that wouldn't be my biggest concern. You can figure out some way. You can print it off and go scan it in a zillion times or find some way to publish the thing. But the actual mechanics of building a budget and having the departmental spreadsheets and all, I mean, the budgets can be built in the new software. That is not the risk at this point. Is that a fair statement?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, that's a fair statement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that update. And members, we had one other item on the agenda relative to a report on contract negotiations. Commissioner Showalter contacted me yesterday. Commissioner, do you want to briefly, quickly report on the status?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. I also want to note, I appreciate the questioning and involvement that you've had in the systems that the department is involved in, because part of that discussion oversight helps, I think, both of us understand where the legislative interests are and help us remember the business reform process. Also, I think it hopefully helps you understand the complexities and difficulties of bringing some of these things live. The last item that I wanted to address today was labor negotiations. As I spoke to the chair yesterday, we've had some movement in the last few days, and we're sort of entering a period where an offer has been made to the unions, and we are entering that period where that is being taken back to the membership for a vote. As a result, as has been the practice in the past, the executive branch really sort of stands down at that point, allows the unions to talk directly to their membership, characterize the offer to their members so that they can have a direct vote, after which we would be available to comment on negotiations and offers. But at this point, the offer has been made and will be taken to the members for their consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner, for that update. And members, we're going to adjourn. Tomorrow we do not meet. All hearings have been canceled for tomorrow. We will meet again on Thursday, and we will be dealing with our final report on the bonding recommendations. We're adjourned.